the ANU's podcast. This is episode 113. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week on Anarchist News. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism by email at podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information and usually some good commentary, go to the non-sectarian anarchistnews.org.
Editorial, Mutual Immolation Brigade. Recently, Cindy Milstein's zine, Mutual Fire Brigade, popped up on ANews. Faced with climate disaster and seemingly inevitable eco-doom, Milstein asks, how is any sort of preparation possible in this zombie apocalypse, in which it feels as if we're reduced to a choice between fascism or extinction, or some macabre survival of the fittest without worry for others? How can we speak of seeds beneath the snow, possibilities in the present-day dystopia, or of a prefigurative politics aspiring toward everything for everyone when the polar ice caps are quickly melting? Their answer is something along the lines of DIY, mutual aid-style disaster response and relief efforts that can help to bring radicals together and hold the line against an impending fascistic environmental crisis. But I remain unconvinced. As I sat and choked on smoke at my job in San Francisco last November, I'm going to say that mutual aid was probably the furthest thing from my mind. I wasn't planning supply runs to aid fire-stricken Californians, but was stuck instead tapping away at a keyboard hoping my 5-alarm smog-induced headache would subside enough for me to make it through my commute home. I wasn't, quote, tending to and nurturing those spaces of possibility and fostering the growth of good lives and good deaths, all with intentionality, fed with waters of empathy, dignity, and love. I was watching instead my friends choke and wheeze in their usually sunlit rooms, now completely shut in to protect against the haze. Perhaps this makes me an egoist, focusing not on faith and anarchism and good deeds, but on myself and my friends. Although, because I haven't read Stirner, perhaps it just makes me the same kind of selfish American liberals like to set up and knock down when their spirits are feeling low. However, what I like to think this reflects is a certain humility and understanding of scale. I don't see myself with the kind of agency that Milstein effuses when they talk of how good works will see us through to the other side of catastrophe, nor do I see banding together under the big tent of good intentions as a particularly attractive path to, quote, mutualistically caring lifeways. Instead, I see myself forced to get up and go to work the same as any other day, even as drug and hardware stores were picked clean of respirators and surgical masks. I wasn't out there caring for the afflicted or battling the kind of blaze which results from human control of four cycles. I was still looking forward to the weekend when I could feel something like a person, see my friends, and sleep. And if collapse or something like it comes, I think this is what it will look like. Something like the secretary still signing papers in the World Trade Center as it burned around her, people going to work and spending money until their flesh falls from the bone. And so, the most I can really ask for is to sit in the smoke of hellfire and sing songs until my friends and I choke on the ash of this world. And maybe, maybe some of us will crawl to the new world on the other side, not knowing until that very moment what it could even look like.
What's new this week? In solidarity with the occupied social centers / squats of Athens, from Autonomies, compiled from news posts from the Enough is Enough media collective. Quote, in a series of police operations in Athens over the last 10 days, four occupied social centers were cleared, including two that provided autonomous, self-managed housing for migrants. The objective is clear, to discipline rebellious segments of the population, most notably anarchists, or those who might think of rebelling, to place under state administration and police surveillance migrants and refugees, under a politics of social division and colonization, and thereby trying to end one of the richest experiences of radical no-border politics in recent memory, and to pacify the urban space for, quote, investment and renewal, unquote. The stories recount the progression of events from cop actions to resistance, protests, moving residents around, organizations working with the cops, support from various directions, and so on. For those interested in what's happening in Athens, and also those who are thinking about how refugee-inclusive resistance looks wherever it might happen.
Warzone Distro's list of new zines. Warzone has started following Sprout's tactic of announcing their zines on ANews. Here they present Insurgency, Wolfie's promotion of insurrection, and critique of the coming insurrection. A piece by Julian Langer called Becoming Animal, a zine version of From Identity to Individuality by Baba Yaga, which was on A-News, and more. Perhaps most notably, the journal Insurgency, an anarchist journal of total destruction, which includes, but is not limited to, many of the articles that are also available individually. I do humbly suggest that saying one is not being moralistic is not the same as not being moralistic, and the words we use have baggage that sometimes is heavier than what we personally bring to them.
Reflections on the ZAD, Another History, from CrimeThink. A CrimeThink roundup on the ZAD, complete with first-person account, lots of pictures, historical context, daily details, political analysis, and hopefulness. This is a service that CrimeThink provides. We should appreciate it. From the section called What Happened at the ZAD, quote, "There is a lot of confusion in the Anglophone world about what happened last spring, especially why some people chose to negotiate with the state and sign contracts. My intention is not to justify the decisions that were made, but to talk about what factors shaped the decision-making. The vulnerabilities of anarchists and anti-authoritarians were used against them by those who became increasingly reformist in their collaboration with liberal groups. The ZAD offers a useful study of how authoritarian tendencies emerge, develop, and undermine situations with revolutionary potential. Because this took place on such a large scale, it is possible to identify patterns that can be disregarded as mere interpersonal conflict in other cases." Unquote. What follows is mostly a story that we know by heart, a time of shining optimism when people seem to all be on the same page, which gradually shifts from multiple factors, single-issue participants getting into conflict with people motivated by more general concerns, conflicts between tactics as well as strategies, lying politicians, brute force from the state, dot, dot, dot. The writer of this piece names the Apolistas as one of the bad faith groups, but these kinds of conflicts are impossible to judge without actual knowledge, and no CrimeThink article can give us that.
Careful, comrade, your class is showing. Extinction Rebellion has some problems, from Organized Magazine. While my hackles rose at the title, this is actually sort of an endearing blog post by someone who works really hard to establish themselves as not a knee-jerk anti-liberal, talking about how radicals and liberals need each other, and anyway that's a false dichotomy, etc., etc. But really now, Extinction Rebellion is doing some shady shit. A surprising amount of space was taken up by justifying that the author is going public with internal criticism, which speaks to a very different culture from what I'm used to, and certainly a different definition of internal. Quote, "Please stop talking to cops, and when the high energy of these actions dies down, take a proper look at the Extinction Rebellion Network and make it better. I've written all this not to attack you and stymie the XR movement, but to bring to light some of the issues which may result in XR kneecapping yourselves. Only you and your fellow rebels can address them and make the movement better. Despite all these concerns, I reckon we need to take the passion that's so clearly here and build a wider-reaching radical movement. That means XR groups taking an honest assessment of the network they're within, and it means getting behind the green anti-capitalist front, Earth First, and campaigns like Earth Strike. We need to put fuel to this fire and provide a clear and visible next step for the people out there doing the things." Unquote. Let's just say that I was not horrified. Sometimes that is the triumph.
From Extinction Rebellion to Desirous Rebellion, from Autonomies. While I could cavil about anarchists taking on liberal organizations, I will instead say that this is an articulate piece of anarchist writing, clear, pointed, and relevant, even if the people who need to read it never will. Quote, "Our contention is not that there is an emergency in the form of an imminent threat of human extinction. Our contention is that the extinction has already occurred, that it is already too late, that we or our descendants have already ceased to be as humans capable of projecting collective futures of fulfilled desires. We are already the walking dead. Carbon levels are already too high. Waste in all its forms poisons the whole of the planet's ecosystems. Biodiversity has been decimated, and the massacre continues relentlessly, and more terrifying monsters await in the form of mass dislocations of peoples, wars, violent climate phenomena, water and food shortages, nightmare authoritarianisms, unmanageable wastes, and the like. Any state response equal to the scale of the situation, simply understood as a crisis, can only be equally violent, and that is no response whatsoever, or at least no response that we could defend." Unquote. Indeed.
New release, Horia number 5, Break Ranks, from Act for Freedom Now. I'm curious about this publication, but it is only available in hard copy from Europe. This announcement is the only English I could find for the new issue. Their site needs an update, I guess? Quote, analyses of war, control, repression, exploitation, the militarization of minds, sectarian hatred, and technological maelstrom as aspects of this domination in constant restructuring come together in this pamphlet, which ventures along the roads of action yesterday as today against their war and against their peace, unquote. Works for me. Now, how do I order one?
Audio and video, Primal Anarchy Podcast 18, Book Recommendations, Part 3. Book recommendations, 1 hour and 44 minutes. Wild Resistance number 6 is out, etc.
Anarchy Radio, April 30th, 2019. An hour, he's back from his brush with basketball. Another classic episode of John Alone. Notable are the fantastic piece he read from, Freddie Perlman's The Continuing Appeal of Nationalism, which Jay-Z used to sell one of his own books, and my introduction to Superchunk, because I'm not keeping up with the music, obviously. Thanks, Carl. Also, Ron called in again as an adorable activist bridge between Jay-Z and online culture by reading an exchange that Ron had with a pro-tech person about medical tech and civilization. Other than that, the normal all-good or all-bad reviews of other people's work. Whether Jay-Z thinks something is good or bad seems to be based on the stars or something. These are the same liberals who don't offer solutions, which is what he focuses on when he's cranky, but here he's happy that they're just acknowledging the problem. So, nice to know he's in a good mood.
From Embers, new content in April 2019. 3 episodes, each a bit less than an hour. The first one is an interview they do with Kevin Tucker on Call of Personality. The second is from a talk by Alexis Shotwell on the relevance of veganism to other ideas, specifically mutual aid. The third is talking to 2 of the organizers of the Montreal Anarchist Book Fair, who are adorable. I would like to hang out with them. They speak to the ambivalence of organizing and attending these big gatherings, the multifaceted goals of such events, the creation of anarchist spaces, the importance of diversity of perspective, and so on. This episode is charming to listen to, even if I disagree with people, which, you know, goes without saying. And the questions from the interviewer were solid, which is nice. Very refreshing to hear anarchist book fair organizers who prioritize workshops that are actually anarchist.
Anarchy Bang. Is there a way to change the world that isn't activism? From Anarchy Bang. Quote, it is a fair point to say that most pessimists were at one time optimists and perhaps failed at that. Activism is nothing if not a kind of optimism. The world, especially the political world, is dark and full of terrors, and hopeful activist people are some of the few that charge into that maw with flaming swords and a belief they'll get to the other side. Many of us pessimists have. This week, we'll talk about activists' attempts to change the world, where we have succeeded, where we have failed, where we have been found wanting, and where the world has failed us. We want to change the world. At best, the world changes us and we make an accounting. Unquote. Another entertaining conversation with a couple of very pleasant callers.
Topic of the week, calling the cops. Recently, I was having a conversation with a non-anarchist friend who is white and female-identifying. She told me about a situation she found herself in where she considered calling the cops. She was alone and was threatened by a person of color who came at her in an explicitly threatening way. I responded with some boilerplate questions and anarchist hostility to the idea of calling the cops at all. Though she isn't an anarchist, she hates the cops as much as I, or most anarchists I know, do, maybe more. She understands the role cops play in society, and especially in relation to race, but found herself in a moment where, had things escalated, that might have been her recourse. As you might assume, the conversation didn't go well. Happily, she didn't call the cops, and is fine, but she asked me, what do I do if calling the cops is off the table, if this happens again and things go the other way? The conversation made me think about a different situation in which someone I know was threatened with a firearm by a former intimate partner, and did get the cops and the courts and all the bullshit state apparatus involved to keep her safe. I have no doubt that if she hadn't made the choice she made, she would be dead. I don't like that there were cops and all that, but I do like that she is still alive. For myself, I know the answer. I don't call the cops. To be frank, when posed with this question by most people, I'm tended to quote Crass, "What if I told you to fuck off?" Or I suggest they read Peter Gelderlos' book, Anarchy Works. But this recent conversation with someone I know has made me revisit the common gotcha questions anarchists are asked, but in a different context. Thinking about these issues, especially in the context of someone who shares most of my opinions about the cops and state, coupled with past experiences, got me thinking about how we engage with state apparatus in the world that is largely not the one we want to live in, as opposed to thinking about it in some sort of theoretical anarchist future. And for someone else who finds themselves in a situation that I'm not a part of, I find myself unsure of how to respond. Given that there are numerous ways I do engage with the state, given the cops are one of the most openly repressed faces of the state, but there are a thousand ways we interact all the time with cops who maybe don't have badges and guns, but wield state power in more nuanced ways. We do not live in the world we want. We live in this one. My friend would happily live in any other mythic world, but she doesn't. I don't. None of us does. And outside of tiny islands we create in the here and now, it's unlikely to be that world anytime soon, if ever. I know the A-News is probably the worst place to ask a question like this, but I'm curious, what are your answers? Because in the moment, given the specific situation my friend found herself in, I didn't really have one. The hot take includes self-defense classes and arming ourselves. This feels like a partial answer, at most. Some might suggest retreating into insular circles that don't or minimally engage with people who don't share a worldview. But I know some who would suggest a pragmatic, tactical approach of accepting that we live in a world where sometimes friends and comrades can't do what cops can. None of this feels satisfying to me. It's easy to say don't call the cops until we find ourselves in a place where the most feasible option is dialing 911, as opposed to texting people who might or might not respond at all or in a timely manner. Do we advocate that everyone starts packing heat? Do we retreat to our tiny islands and pretend the outside world doesn't exist? Do we acknowledge that given the terrible world that we move in, sometimes some people do need to call the cops? Part of why this topic of the week is a bit late is I wanted feedback from the main person I reference, blah, blah, blah. So I am talking this week with Not Null. Hello, Not Null. How are you?
Hello, I'm good.
What do you think about cops? Or calling them?
Yeah. So I'm definitely one of those sanctimonious never call the cops people. I'm not preachy about it, but I, you know, my take on police really comes from my experience in life, which has been that actually every experience that I have ever had with the police, you know, even as a young child, as a teenager, especially, has been kind of, I ended up worse off than I might have been had I not had to interact with the police. For example, I remember a time when I was a young child and I lived in an apartment complex, and across the street, there were some neighbors who were, one of them was like violently assaulting the other. And so my parents called the police. Of course, they like probably didn't think anything of it. What the police ended up doing was they ended up coming into the front of the apartment complex to our house, coming up to our door. In other words, like letting the entire apartment complex know that my parents were the ones who called the police, right? And therefore like putting us in danger. And that's just, you know, one story of many that I have where, you know, getting the cops involved actually kind of made the situation more dangerous. Yeah. And so my answer to this question is that, you know, I think, yes, there seems like there's these situations where you don't really have an option other than calling the police. But what I think is so interesting about that framing is that it assumes that calling the police is a solution, that somehow we're, you know, we're only like holding our nose and making that decision because it's the only, you know, we're giving up our morals and making that decision because it's the only thing available to us. But I question in most of these cases whether it's a solution at all, whether we'll be safer if we get the police involved. And so, yeah, that's definitely my take on this question, is that, and I mean, I feel like this is true for myself, but I especially feel like this is true for, you know, other people of color, for example, where it literally is not the case that making the decision to call the police is putting them in a safer situation. And so, I mean, I guess my answer to that question is, yeah, those situations are unfortunate, but you are just as likely to have an unfortunate situation if you get the police involved, which is why I never call the police. And I also have young children. children. One of the comments in the theme of the week, in the topic of the week, mentioned children. And I also have children. They're actually not that young anymore, but I also tell them to never call the cops. Yeah, so I'm definitely like one of those people for sure.
Yeah, you know, some of the best writing on this topic was actually done by Bob Black. And, you know, he
ironic.
Said, well, not so ironic, but I mean, Bob is very much inside of police logic, not outside. So he's not an outside critic. He's an inside critic, which those do tend to be better. But the thing that he says that I think is really nice in the piece that he wrote on this topic is that cops are in the revenge business, not in the safety business. And that's part mm-hmm. of the problem with having this conversation in most contexts is that we're assuming that cops fulfill a role that they don't in fact fill. They fill it rhetorically, but that's it. You know, really what they're going to do is hunt down the person that hurt you and or killed you. And then who fucking knows what happens? Because, you know, as we know, all the actors involved have extremely mixed motivations.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I think that's exactly right. And again, I every time I've kind of seen anarchists grapple with this question, to me, the framing again seems so strange, as if it's this decision that we don't really want to make because it's against our morals, but sometimes we make it even though it pains us. And I just fail to see how it's even a solution. In other words, I think like a more sensible kind of framing of this is not what do we do if in those situations where we have to call the cops, but like, you know, what kinds of other networks of solutions can we start to put together? And they talked about this, somebody talked about this a little bit in the comments about, you know, organizing your own self-defense and these self-defense networks. And they kind of questioned this approach because, oh, maybe, you know, they're not going to show up. It's not fail-safe. But again, calling the police isn't fail-safe. So I think it makes much more sense to entertain, you know, those kinds of options rather than calling the police. And again, I think it's so weird that even us as anarchists, it's like in the back of our mind that like all we have to do is, you know, make that decision and it'll be solved for us, even though we'll feel guilty about it, because that's, I just don't think that's true.
Well, again, it's worth reflecting on the social roles that we believe that police do, because, you know, mm-hmm. you're sort of banging on the drum of safety and of course pointing out the illusion that cops have anything to do with safety. But by and large, cops are paper pushers, right? They mostly exist for most people to protect their property, to fill out insurance papers, to, you know, they mostly do paperwork. You know, they take in cars that are parked incorrectly. You know, it's like,
yeah.
And sometimes it does feel like the Rambo idea of what police do and why we would call them in the first place. You know, when I think about the two times I've called the cops in the past 20 years, one time was for insurance and literally involved me interacting with a phone tree. And the other time was because I was at work and I worked at a hotel that was basically on the edge of a sketchy neighborhood, and you know, and my role at my work was to be the public interface, and so whatever. And I think that's actually, you know, more common than the risk my life option, because I think that most people and you know, the reason why crime rates have dramatically decreased over the past X number of years is partially because everyone is walking around town with a camera in their hands. And just the whole relationship that people have to surveillance and to sort of like person-on-person crime is just totally transformed.
Mm-hmm.
And again, just to put a point on that, like, because cops are in the revenge business, your camera is just as good as they would be.
Right. Yeah, I think the surveillance, you know, issue is definitely, it plays an important role. And then also, you know, when there's this issue of like process and being processed. And, you know, in some cases of arrest, like the way that, like, even the police will record the process so that exactly like you're saying, like, it's all kind of recorded down and the paperwork is all, you know, the I's and T's are dotted and crossed. What you were talking about actually made me think of this from another angle as well, which is the role of like the depersonalization of us just filling our roles in society. So the example that comes to my mind for this all the time is the way that the airline people, the couple of situations that happened recently where the guy had to use the bathroom and they called the cops on him and, or they dragged him off the plane and they like physically assaulted him. And those kinds of behaviors, I always think of them as being a result of this depersonalization of your job. In other words, your job is so shitty and you so don't want to deal with it, but you have to, that you kind of just go through these motions of process. And calling the cops is almost kind of like an extension of that, where it's like, we're so removed from dealing with the community that's around us, like as human beings, interacting with other human beings, that we kind of just like, you know, pay other people to take care of those things for us, or, you know, just kick the can down the road by like having the police take care of it. And I think, yeah, I think that that's another just symptom or problem with the way that the systematic, I guess you might put it as like the violence that society is doing against us, because what else are we going to do? I mean, like if your job is to protect the property of your hotel and go through the correct process by calling the police, yep. What are you going to do? Not do your job? And like, of course, you're not even really connected to it, right? You have to like kind of divorce yourself from it to even get through it. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it's really problematic. And it's also really shitty. You know what else is shitty is the cops.
The cops are shitty. Although and you know, it's like if you're going to be against the state, there is no more clear face of the state than the police. And so in that way, it's like ACAB and fucking, you know, knock yourself out. But sometimes I do feel embarrassed about being an anarchist because of the basically incoherent and just silly way in which anarchists talk about this particular topic. You know, and again, like there's moralism all the way down, and okay, that's fine. But actually, this thread was really good. The discussion of the topic of the week. And one of my favorite commenters or recent commenters who just took on a screen name, I feel like this is a great comment they made. Their name is See Now Old Troll. The best anti-cop position is a practical one, if you ask me. Sure, there's dozens of great theoretical arguments, but you don't really need them. Theory gets bogged down in ideological debate. Instead, just an objective assessment of what cops actually do 99% of the time is all the anti-cop argument you ever need. And I think that's great. I think that that's mm-hmm. sort of says it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's exactly right. But I mean, I don't know if you heard this in a practical approach to calling the cops, which is like, to me, that it sounds like the person is saying sometimes it's just necessary. And, you know, I would just push back on that by saying that, I mean, it just sounds like there's an assumption that that's actually going to be effective. And I'm just not sure that that's the case, like most of the time.
Yeah. I mean, I literally think they said 99% of the time, but... as opposed to your liberal position that's only most of the time 50%. Sorry, go on.
Yes, and well, no, and I'm, you know, there probably is some situation unimagined in my future where, you know, that might be the right course of action. And I can definitely tell you that, you know, I would make a pragmatic choice for sure. But I guess what I'm getting at is that to me, that wouldn't look like not feeling safe, even being in danger. I'm definitely one of those people. Like, I would rather my neighbor literally murder me then call the cops. Like, that's how I feel about it. But, you know, there may be some unimagined situation in the future. And of course, also, taking into consideration other people, because I don't expect other people to hold my position about interacting with the police, and I wouldn't enforce that on them. But yeah, I definitely feel pretty strongly about it. And it's definitely because of the experiences that I've had, not necessarily because of just some like moral stance.
Sure. Well, thank you very much for having this discussion with me.
Sure, absolutely.
Punishment fits a crime. Nothing beats mutilation. Humiliation's a disease. Nothing beats humiliation.
This podcast is the effort of many people. What's New was written by Jackie and read by Chisel and Dim. The editorial was written by Dim. We thank Aragorn and Not Null for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and other material are available at littleblackcart.com. For news by and or about anarchists and up-to-the-minute commentary, see you at anarchistnews.org and or the Anarchist News IRC chat room, linked on ANews.
Nothing hurts some like a cop with a club. Nothing beats some like a cop with a club. Nobody rapes them like a cop with his club.